This is David Ray with New Letters on the Air, a program of readings and music coming to you from New Letters Magazine, the literary quarterly of fine writing published at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. On today's program, we are doing something very special. We are taking you inside Attica Prison in upstate New York to hear music and poetry by the prisoners themselves, including Cal Rucker, Harry Beacon, Che, Henry Hornrack, and Raymond Chung. These men will be reading their own poems and poems by other prisoners, and they are joined within the walls of Attica by their guest poet of the day, Sonia Sanchez, who had been invited to the prison by Gerald McCarthy, a fine young poet who has been visiting the prison regularly to conduct workshops at Attica. Gerald McCarthy has generously arranged for us to share this dramatic experience with you inside the walls of Attica Prison.
Mind is a void due to insufficient funds. No sale shows from within the brass cash register. A suicide has been committed, yet there's no body. All these words are dead. Burial services will be held in the day room of the asylum. Be sure to send word if you cannot attend. It has been confirmed Loch Ness actually does contain a monster. A disturbance occurred at Attica July 11th, 1976. With a show of force, it was quelled. Hal J. was seen running the catwalk in Bermuda shorts. All these birds are dead.
The marketplace. I was walking without direction, when smiling black faces made me smile, and then wonder why, when 2 steps and 1 minute ago, I thought all was dead. And then she came, walking in my direction, her head held high. Her smile was mine, and my heart ran to greet her, in hope and childhood delight. But I lost my joy to the distance, when in my outstretched hand, she quickly put a dime and went quickly on.
I tried drawing a picture of my wife 26 times. Each time I drew it, something was missing. I guess I'm like a doctor. I want a complete cure. That is by Raymond Chung, a.k.a. Sharif Latif. This poem is entitled, Behind This Background. I've done a considerable amount of time behind these walls. I'm part of the total sum, zero. Harry Beacon, a.k.a. Harry Nelson, 76A, 2291. This poem is entitled, A Conversation with Metal. Walls, you are cold. If you are a reflection of your makers, then hope is truly an illusion. It would be insignificant to paint you yellow or red or blue. Color would not change you. You are a wall. This poem is entitled, Direction Home. Where is home? Is it where the buffalo roam? Where have they gone? Were they erased or removed to a different place? Am I not like them? This poem is entitled Time. Time,
What are you? Where is your form? What is your substance? I feel that you can crush me with a single, unimaginable blow. Time. Do you need a partner?
This poem is called Attica. It's written by one of the brothers that are not here today. Brother's name is Ray Shum, a.k.a. Sharif A. Latif. But before I get into it, let me just state that it is not the consciousness of man that determines his social existence, but at the other hand, it is the social existence that determines man's consciousness. Attica. My sleep disturbed by animal sounds. I returned from dreamland. In these dark gray green cubicles of death, another man's life is up for grabs. I'm awake, I'm not asleep. Police, police, a man is down. Police, police, my God, a man is down. Another inmate's voice joins my cry. Help him, for the love of Allah, a man is down. Still no other sound to be heard but my voice, and animal sounds are now only my voice, as the inmate's body bounces up and down on the cold concrete ground. These 20 feet tall, gray, ugly walls must fall, because they are killing us all. Here comes a cop, thank God, some relief. What? He's just taking account. Officer, yo officer, please, please come back. Don't let him die. He can't die like this. I'm not a doctor, nor am I a nurse. I get paid, man, so let him call a hearse. Poor white trash in 38, by morning, he'll be straight now in hell. 4:54 a.m., October 7th, 1976.
To get things started here, very lovely young lady is going to come on up and read for you, Sonia Sanchez. Let's give her a nice warm welcome. This is Sonia Sanchez.
It's good being here in Attica. I want to read from a first book called Homecoming of mine. And the title poem is called Homecoming. I have been away so long. Once after college, I returned tourist style to watch all the niggas killing themselves with 3-for-1ers, with needles that could not support their stutters. Now, woman, I have returned, leaving behind me all those hide-and-seek faces peeling with Freudian dreams. This is for real. Black niggas, my beauty, baby, I have learned it ain't like they say in the newspapers. That's a poem I did at a time in the 1960s when a lot of black people were all of a sudden finding out that they were indeed black, which is a very hard experience in America because we had been told we were Negroes or something worse than a Negro. And so some of us stumbled upon something called blackness, and that was with the help of some people who were talking a lot to us, people like Malcolm, people like Elijah Muhammad, people like who were involved with like what was happening in America, told us something about blackness, and many of us who were writers or teachers or professors looked at that and had to deal with that. And I'm sure some of you looking at the age grouping here had to come across that also. And some of us started to go into prisons and we talked about what that meant, being black in America. Being black in America meant that we simply didn't rip off people no more. If we understand George Jackson, what he was about, we understood what that meant. But like when a young brother came to prison, nobody whipped him off again, if you know, dig where I'm coming from. I was very real. If you black, you had to deal with that blackness. You were responsible for those young brothers, you know, those so-called kids coming into the joint. I mean, he had to go out of there much better than you, because you were older, you knew better. You had to go through a whole lot of crack. The young brothers shouldn't have to be put through that kind of fire. You're there to protect them, because you are responsible for your brothers and your sisters, too. That's very real stuff that, like, people didn't want to deal with. The blackness made you deal with that, made you come full circle and see yourself, understand. What's happening to us today has happened, or it's happening, because people have not had a responsibility for each other. And so a poem that I did at the time was a poem simply called Malcolm. Do not speak to me of martyrdom, of men who died to be remembered on some parish day. I don't believe in dying, though I too shall die, and violets like castanets will echo me. Yet this man, this dreamer, thick-lipped with words, will never speak again. And in each winter, when the cold air cracks with frost, I'll breathe his breath and mourn my gun-filled night. He was the sun that tagged the western sky and melted tiger scholars while they searched for strife. He said, forget you, white man. We have been curled too long. Nothing is sacred now, not your white face nor any land that separates until some voices squat with spasms. Do not speak to me of living. Life is obscene with crowds of white on black. Death is my pulse. What might have been is not for him or me, but what could have been floods the womb until I drown. It's a poem for a man by the name of Malcolm, who was very important to a whole lot of us. Let me read from another book called We Are Bad People, a poem I did for Brothers in the Joint called Black Rhetoric, for Killebrew, Kibi, Icewater, Baker, Gary Adams, and Omar Shabazz. Who's going to make all that beautiful black rhetoric mean something? Like, I mean, who's going to take the words black is beautiful and make more of it than black capitalism, you dig? I mean, like, who's going to take all the young, long-haired, natural brothers and sisters and let them grow till all that is important is themselves moving in straight revolutionary lines towards the enemy, and we know who that is? Like, man, who's going to give our young black people new heroes instead of catchphrases, instead of Cadillacs, instead of pence, instead of white whores, instead of drugs, instead of new dances, instead of chitlins, instead of a 35-cent bottle of Ripple, instead of quick lovemaking in the hallway of white America's mind? Like, this is an S-O-S-O-S-O-S-O-S-O-S-O-S me calling, calling. Someone, please reply soon. I helped start something called Black Studies in America in 1968 in a place called San Francisco State, 1966 in a place called San Francisco, a place where Reagan was governor and a man by the name of Harkawa decided that there would be nothing called Black Studies. I grew up in New York City, and I never knew anything about myself as a black person. It took me years to find out exactly who I was and what that was all about. And when I did find out about that, I was determined that other people would understand, too, that young children would never grow up to be 20 and not know exactly about their heritage and their history and just how important they are and were. But like, they didn't know that, like, there were black people in China. I had the privilege in 1973 of visiting the People's Republic of China, and I was talking to the university professors. I teach on the university level at Temple University, and I said, there were black people here, right? Paul Yee's. And they did a double take and said, yeah, how'd you know that? I said, because we study. There's always been a black person on every part of this land, on every piece of the land, there's been a black man. And it's just amazing to understand you were first and a man, black man on the face of the earth, and how so many of us end up being last, and a great deal of us end up being in prisons, too. Majority of people in prisons are black people, and that's not by chance, that's on purpose. You know it, too. But you got to move past just knowing why you're here. Because you're here on purpose, that means you have to come back on purpose. If you're here on purpose, that means you're to die while you're here. And if you're to die, that means you got to kill each other. And that means that we have killed each other in prisons and larger prisons outside in places like New York and Detroit, California, Philadelphia. We kill each other for the damnedest things, for like a little sniff of cocaine, a little heroin, you know. We rape little 15-year-old girls and think nothing about it, you know, not understanding that they're 15-year-olds and they're like they are babies. I don't get how hard they come on. Yeah, man, I'm heavy. I know everything that's happening. I'm a cool sister. You know, most of them just 14-year-olds don't know what the world is all about, but you're supposed to know what the world is about. And you ain't about, like, doing that to no 13 and 12-year-old. We're talking about protecting each other and understanding what that's about, you know. That you are, many of you, old enough to know that for us to survive America, and when we are about surviving America, you've got to, like, make sure some of us come through. I was telling Felipe that I grew up in Harlem, and for some strange reason, some of the brothers who were in gangs determined that I would survive, that my sister and a sister named Sylvia would survive. They went around and said very simply, you are going to survive. They saw something in us. They knew that, like, we would do something, hopefully, for our race and our people. And you got to do the same kind of thing in the joint or wherever you be. You got to point out and say, you're going to survive this. Because we need people who will survive with some kind of sanity, some kind of sense to take us through the next 25, 30 years. Because they're going to be some hard years. They're getting much harder if you understand truly what I'm saying. I was starting Black, helping to begin Black Studies. And I was pregnant at the time. I had twin sons, Mungu Mayusi, which means Black God, and Marani Mayusi, which means Black Warrior. And we were on a picket line, and I came home, and they, because like I was about, I don't know how many months pregnant at the time, and but kind of tired from that line, and I came home, and some sisters who were involved with something called Black Students Union came home with me to put me to bed to rest and fix, supposedly fix lunch for me. And in the midst of all that, one of the sisters said, what time is it? And I said, I don't know, check the clock in the kitchen. She says, time for my program. I said, what is your program? She says, as the world turns. I said, if you're Black, you gotta know how the world turns. If you don't, you're in trouble. It didn't matter. The both the sisters came out the kitchen and sat down on the edge of the bed and turned on the television, and here was this idiot box, you know, with this program. And, you know, this is what happened. I got up and got my soup and my sandwich and came back, you know, and sat with my tray in the bed and watched the program. And this is what happened. The dude, you know, came in to this apartment, and his wife was on a couch eating chocolates and reading a book. He says, Marsha, darling, how are you? She looked up and said, Peter, dear, how are you, darling? She says, Peter, I've missed you. Have you been away, darling? He says, yes, I've been in Europe for 3 months. She says, I thought I had missed you. He says, I just got back in from Europe, and I went straight to my office, and my secretary told me the good news. She told me, you are pregnant. She says, yes, darling, I am, but it's not yours. The music goes doing. It gets very dramatic, and like the camera zooms in for a close-up on his face, and he crosses the room and opens the drawer and takes out two gold-tipped cigarettes and comes back and lights two and says, darling, do you want to talk about it? She says, yes, dear, I do. Remember that weekend you went away with Juliet because you were mad at me? Well, that weekend, Tom came home from Vietnam. He was in the veterans hospital, and I went to see him, and he had a broken right arm and a broken left thigh bone and a right broken ankle and a crushed-in chest cavity and a brain concussion. I went to the hospital to see him, and it happened there. That's what they lay on people. And that's what they laid on these young sisters. And they said, oh, that's life and living. Ain't that hip? And where you and I know the real obscenity in America is that. The prisons are made up mostly of black and Puerto Ricans. That's obscene, if you dig where I'm coming from. That black people in America go to bed hungry still, that's obscene. That in South Africa, you know, white people still rule black in a country of majority of black. That a black man has to carry a pass in South Africa to move from one spot to another. That's obscene, if you dig where I'm coming from. You know, that's the real obscenity of the world, that the schools in New York City and in Philadelphia and in San Francisco and in California and in Detroit and in Chicago don't teach black children anything. That blacks and Puerto Ricans are illiterate and they're 14 and 15 and 16. That's obscene. Not who's speaking with whom, but that's obscene. That's the obscenity they give us now. So you go watch that blood. You watch that blood and don't deal with the obscenity of the world, that you're still powerless people. You know, that no one remembers Attica in 1971. I asked my classroom, you know, what happened on this day, September 9th? What happened? Oh, no, what happened? Your birthday? It is my birthday, September 9th. You know, but there's a whole lot of other people's birthdays and birth deaths, too, if you understand that, coming full circle. That death and life are the same, if you understand that truly. That when people died here, that like leaving, you were not dying by yourself, because we've been dying a hell of a long time in America. You know, and it was just another case of death. And so I talked about the deaths that were happening on television. A poem called Summertime TV is Whiter Than Ever. Little Anthony and the Imperials singing Exodus without Jewish accents. This land is mine until I die. This land is mine. I'm hip cause the whole place is up for grabs. And bloods be singing about dying for what ain't even theirs. Never can be without fighting. Brings back memories of Diana Ross and the Supremes. Rogers and Harting all over the screen, Diana blowing back the soft straight strands of her pressed mind, yeah. And baby love, remnants of past stolen so long gone, harmonizes in tune to where has Diana's black soul gone to? Barbara McNair belts out Get Me to the Church on Time for Real and puts her white soul into it. And the cameraman moves in for close-up after close-up after close-up to show white America not all the niggas want to look like they sell. Maybe the country's still safe. And Barbara McNair sings on a clear day, you can see forever. Which way shall we point her? To another? To another naked picture in Playboy, and then the sound of white screams, the young rascals foaming at the mouth with bongos, bringing their attempted soul beat to the people, trying to be black while all that went before was fighting. It ain't like nothing. And all of this happened in America in the year of televised assassinations, 1968. They went around trying, you know, killing a whole lot of people in 68. And would have you believe that like it was just by chance you saw an assassination on television. And you know nothing happens by chance in America. We know that. Let me end up with a couple of poems. With three more poems, okay? One is called Answer to Your Question of Am I Not Your Woman, Even You Went on Drugs Again. And I, a beginner in your love, say no. I would not be your woman and see you disappear each day before my eyes and know your reappearance to be a one-night stand. No man. Black lovers cannot live in white powder that removes them from their black selves. Cannot ride majestic white horses in a machine age. Black lovers must live, push against the evils of this world, against the creeping whiteness of their own minds. I am your woman, my man. And black women deal in babies and sweet black kisses and nights that multiply by two. Why I don't get high on stuff. Cause it says, nigga, you stupid. You an ass, you suicidal and escapist. I'll help you die, escape. Just take these pills, weed, stuff every day and come with me to Tristland. Change colors, get white. Forget you black, ever been black. Forget that black woman waiting for you, your black children, your black nation. Come on, fool, sucker. Take some more of my shit and stay dead forever. want to end up with a love poem I did for a young couple in New York City, a brother who had been arrested, and we got him out. And she called, and one of my students, and both of them were my students, and when I was teaching in New York, before I got blackballed for being too political, and started my sojourn in America, traveling from city to city. Poem called Welcome Home, My Prince. Welcome home, my prince, into my white season of know you. Welcome home to my songs that touch your head and rain green laughter and greetings. Welcome home to this Monday that has grown up with the sound of your name. For I have chanted to yesterday's sun to hurry back with this belly full of mourning, and you have come, and I cannot look up at you. My body trembles and I mumble things as you stand tall and sacred so easily in yourself. But I am here to love you, to carry your name on my ankles like bells, to dance in your arena of love. You are tattooed on the round, soft parts of me, and your smell is always with me. And a poem, which is a dialogue poem between a brother and a sister. Brother, peace be unto you. Sister, peace be unto you. Brother, and how moves my queen today? Sister, my happiness creases the ground as I walk, my king. Brother, I have not seen you in days and I miss your face. Sister, I have carried your picture in my eyes, my brother. Brother, in life, one searches for his twin and you are mine. Sister, since birth, I have not moved, waiting for you to sift these waves until they flake like diamonds over me. Brother, I have become the sun. Sister, I feel your heat. Brother, it is hard for the sun to keep all the light and not have a moon to give it to. Sister, it is hard for a moon to deal without her sun. Brother, shall I be the sun for your darkness? Sister, black man, shine upon me. I am a moon for your light, and christened by your sun will make night become day, and the morning shall cradle our blackness. Thank you.
Been listening to Sonia Sanchez reading her work at Attica Prison, and also other poets from the prison itself. We are grateful to Gerald McCarthy, the Attica Workshop's leader, and to all the poets and musicians who have shared their work with us today. The powerful jazz drum music was provided by Howell Sonny Williams, Ray Padilla, and Ken Adamson. This is David Ray with New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine and KCUR-FM at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. We welcome your comments on our program. Just drop us a postcard at UMKC, Kansas City, Missouri, 64110. Technical production has been by Albert Belge. New Letters on the Air is supported by a grant from the National Endowment on the Arts.